was the continued liberty of political terrorist Rog Blake that prompted the Terran administration to send Councillor Burkhall and myself to Space Command headquarters to discuss with Supreme Commander Servalan what countermeasures she intended taking.
Gentlemen, I share the President's grave concern, but let us keep this matter in its correct perspective. It is true that Blake has command of a superb space vehicle, but he is just a man backed by a handful of criminals who has been extremely lucky to evade capture.
With respect, Supreme Commander, we are aware of the facts. They are simply that with all the resources that the Federation can call upon, this one lucky man is still free to cause havoc.
You have some criticism of my handling of this matter, Secretary Montaigne?
Not at all. I hope merely to convey the concern shown by the President when he briefed me for this visit.
It would be very helpful to all of us if we knew if you could indicate what action you will now be taking against me.
Very well, Councillor Burkhall. You may tell the President that I am appointing a space commander to take absolute control of this matter.
May we know the officer's name?
Yes, you may. Space Commander Travis.
I understood that Travis had been suspended from duty, pending an inquiry into the massacre of the civilians on the planet Oros.
And I have satisfied myself that Travis acted correctly in this matter.
There are other incidents on his record, unfortunate incidents.
He has caused the administration some political embarrassment in the past. In dealing with even minor insurrections, he has been, overzealous?
Oh, don't be afraid of the word, Secretary. Ruthless. Committed. He does his duty as he sees it, and he sees it clearly. He has no time for the dirty grey areas of your politics.
I'm sure you're right, and of course the appointment is made on your judgment and your responsibility.
Responsibility is something I have never evaded, Secretary.
I require all central record files relating to Travis, Space Commander, Alpha 15105, who has recently been made executive officer of this space station.
There are currently four subjects held in detention who bear a direct relation to your inquiry. Do you require access?
Yes. State Travis's origins.
David Maloney, producer.
The Federation, of course, appeared in the very first episode, directed by Michael E. Bryant. All the themes and all the stories in Series 1 were Terry Nation's original ideas. I'm not sure how far Terry had planned into the first series, but I think having established these rather menacing stormtroopers, we then had to get to the heart of the Federation, discover the brains behind the Federation, and then, of course, we came upon Servalan and Travis.
Cross-reference, Chris Boucher, script editor.
Initially he was brought into the program because you needed a villain. He was an archetypal villain. A bad guy. A strong bad guy. A man who knew his place. Had a straightforward function.
Was the producer responsible for the casting of Stephen Greif as Travis?
Yes, I was involved in all the casting of Blake Seven. I cast all the principal actors on my own. I had no directors working with me when the permanent cast was engaged. I chose them in consultation with Terry Nation, but I was responsible for all the main casting.
Cross-reference, Stephen Greif, actor, via satellite link.
I was recording a situational comedy for the BBC called Citizen Smith, and I was in a canteen, and a friend of mine called Paul Darrow, who played Avon in the series, mentioned that they were looking for a kind of resident villain, and he thought I might fit the bill quite well, and to get on to the producer, and I did, and I went to see him, and they offered me the part.
Have you approved my requisitions for personnel and equipment?
Already assigned. Why mutoids particularly?
I've always thought that individuals with a high bionic rebuild were more reliable, less likely to let emotion interfere with judgment or duty. I'd give a mutoid priority over a man every time. Well, perhaps it's this that gives me a fellow feeling.
Does it still trouble you?
No, the hand is fine. Better than the original. The surgical mechanics did a perfect refit. I had the weaponry division make a few adaptations. They built in a laser-on destroyer. More powerful than any sidearm. It only troubles me because it's a constant reminder that the man who caused it is still alive.
Blake. That's why I chose you.
Oh?
I read all the reports, of course. But none of them said what happened. None of them explained about your face. It was patched up by a field medic.
Man saved my life.
But why did you never let the surgeons finish the job?
You find it repulsive.
I find it unpleasing.
But memorable. You wouldn't mistake me for anyone else. Neither will Blake. Even after all this time, he'll know me and remember what happened at our first meeting.
Tell me.
He organized some attacks against some of our political rehabilitation centers. I was assigned to deal with the matter. We got information that Blake was planning another raid. We knew the location of the meeting point. I made my plans well in advance.
Group had arranged to meet in a sub-basement. You're about 30. I was very particular about security. No Federation forces came anywhere near the place. I was absolutely sure that we were safe. All right, we've assembled. About to begin. Travis and his men suddenly appeared from nowhere. He'd been hiding in that basement for more than 2 days. He made no attempt to resist arrest. There was no point. We had no chance. I said to Travis, we will offer no resistance. He just stared at me. Then he ordered his men to open fire. I ran. I found myself grappling with a guard. I managed to get his gun away from him, and then I was hit in the leg. As I went down, I saw Travis.
I always felt that Travis was a boy soldier. Sort of today's equivalent would be that he would be a Bernardo boy who went into the army and made a damn good career out of it and rose through the ranks to become an officer. I felt he didn't have a family. He never had a family except the army. One of those ideal people in any military force for whom that force is his family, his life, his reason for surviving. We all need to belong, and he belonged to the army.
Very black and white kind of a guy. Nothing in the script suggests that he could have been other than a ruthless soldier and a personal vendetta against his leg. To bring him in. There are no personality guidelines in the script or otherwise to show that he's anything else but a bit of a malicious killer. A bit of a loner, I think.
Travis was a sort of gimmick. A man who'd lost his arm and had a ray gun as a replacement, and only one eye. Well, that didn't seem to affect Nelson. We knew that Blake had been responsible for the maiming of Travis, and that they were sworn enemies. I think the casting of Stephen Greif in the first series was extremely powerful, and physically, sort of dominating actor. A very good foil for Blake. His relationship with Servalan, they were two different characters, conceived to work alongside one another. I can't recall that there was ever any relationship developed between the two of them on any sort of intimate level.
There were various nods and winks and whispers about what the relationship might have been. Various writers had various ideas. The actors themselves had various ideas. As far as I was concerned, the relationship between the two was a formal one in its way. Servalan was the supreme commander of the forces. Travis had been trained from being a boy to be a good officer. He, therefore, almost a subconscious level, a highly trained level, regarded her as what she was, the supreme authority. He could no more have killed her, for example, or ultimately refused a direct order from her, than he could have done anything that ran against his instinct. I mean, than sort of kill himself or on orders. I mean, stick this gun in your ear and blow your brains out, Travis. Well, no, I don't think I'll bother. I mean, he would have taken a direct order to lead a suicide charge. He would have led the charge of the Light Brigade without a second thought. Servalan was the ultimate authority to whom he had been trained to respond. And that was what was fundamentally their relationship. Anything else was just dressing.
Above an uncharted world, 3 Federation pursuit ships prepare to engage the spacecraft Liberator in combat. However, before the duel can be completed, the 2 respective captains, Travis and Blake, are transported to the planet's surface.
Who are you? I am Sinifar, the gardener. This is Giro.
You do realize that any hostile act against me will be regarded as a hostile act against the Federation? Have you any idea of the risk you're running?
You don't seem very impressed, Travis. Why don't you try stamping your foot?
Oh, that's very amusing, Blake. For a dead man. This man is an enemy of the Federation. Tried and convicted. I must bring him back to justice or kill him.
You?
I am an enemy of the Federation. But it is corrupt and oppressive. I would destroy it.
Irreconcilable viewpoints. The classic pattern for war. Since each of you wishes to destroy the other, we are going to give you the chance.
A duel?
A fight to the death. But this way there will be a limit to the deaths. And we will ensure that the loser's ship has an opportunity to get away. Don't you find that rational?
No. When I've killed Blake, I simply hunt down the others.
There will be no destruction within our influence. But we cannot control your actions beyond this planet.
I don't think I want to kill your entertainment.
You have no choice.
We could agree not to fight.
Could we?
If you trusted one another. There is another matter. A lesson you must learn about death.
I think we both know enough about that already.
You both know how to kill. But here you must take a life. There will be no machines to make the act unreal. You must touch the life you take.
Shall we get on with it?
I'm anxious he is to reach the forest. Once there, you can only return when it is over.
Weapons?
Tools for survival.
So this is your lesson.
Pathetic.
Duel, partly because it worked as far as it did by Pantheon, and also he allowed me to have a little say in the direction of the episode, including a number of my suggestions, which I was grateful for. Enjoyed that. Fill me in your class.
Blake is teleported to the forest with ship's pilot Jenna Stannis as companion. Travis, however, is merely provided with his piloting mutoid. As night falls, they retreat to the relative safety of the trees, away from preying animals.
The scene between Travis and the mutoid in the trees, it was basically an attempt to turn the mutoid into something more than simply a robot, with vampiric tendencies, with requirements for plasma.
Tell me something. In your previous life, before you were modified, do you know who you were?
Of course not.
Aren't you curious about it?
No.
I find that hard to believe.
Memory is an encumbrance. All trace of it is removed, and with it, all trace of identity.
But it doesn't concern you.
Why should it? That identity doesn't exist, even in the central computers.
Yes, it does. I know who you were. Your name was Kiera. Kiera.
Kiera.
You're very beautiful. Very much admired. Shall I go on?
As you wish.
This doesn't interest you at all, does it?
How could it?
Keep
watch. Yes, Commander.
Travis, sitting in a tree with a robot in a situation that he'd been projected into by vaguely supernatural beings, with an opportunity to kill the person that he badly wanted to kill, arguably would have been slightly less taciturn than normal. I mean, he wouldn't just sit in the tree waiting for it to happen. He might have been, I mean, he was sort of worried. And he would have quite liked another human being to talk to, but what he got was a mutoid. And if you were operating with one particular one, it might be useful to know where they came from. It might be a lever. In the event, it wasn't a lever because there was no way you could lever somebody like that. There was no part of them you could get hold of, except their requirement for plasma. He misinterpreted what they were. But I mean, it was a human thing. And Travis was you.
You fought well, Blake.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Why didn't you kill him?
Too weak. Or maybe I didn't entirely trust your motive. Besides, As long as he's alive, he'll be the one chasing me. And I know I can beat him.
Better the devil you know. It was this simplistic attitude to Travis that would eventually cost Blake dearly.
Supreme Commander, it's good to see you. A safe journey, I trust.
Nothing is safe anymore. You've heard, of course, that there have been 2 attempts on my life.
I have. I was very concerned.
I consider Blake to be responsible. Oh, not personally, of course. But stories of his exploits are still circulating. They excite people. The fact that he is still free gives them hope, and that is dangerous, Travis. Hope is very dangerous.
The loss of it can be fatal, and the source of it all is about to be wiped out.
I think you should know that there's been considerable criticism of your handling of the Blake affair.
What?
Well, so far, your operation has been very costly, and there have been no worthwhile results.
That's not entirely just. There have been 2 occasions where I could have destroyed Blake. It was only the administration's insistence that the Liberator be captured undamaged that stopped me.
I have made that point in your defense, but I can't go on making excuses. I've been under considerable pressure to replace you.
Oh?
Oh, so far, I have resisted that pressure. But now, I need your reassurance that my confidence has not been misplaced.
I think Project Avalon will silence.
It does seem an excellent plan.
I'm glad you approve.
In my position, one never approves anything until it is an undisputed success.
Yeah.
However, you have my full support. Unofficially, of course.
Do you think Travis believed the Federation was a force for good?
I don't think initially he would have had any idealistic feelings about it at all, either way. The wonderful thing about, I was going to say the wondrous thing, about getting young lads to go into the forces. They haven't formed any attitudes or views. They are malleable. Travis would have been that. So, I mean, he didn't go into the forces thinking this is a force for good or any of that stuff. It's just a career. Once in, once trained, the training requires that you don't think. It's important that you don't think, because if you do think, you cease to be a tool of the ruling elite and become the ruling elite. And most military coups come about because people realize that they've got the guns and nobody else has, so why shouldn't they be in charge? You don't want people thinking in those situations. I don't think he would ever have thought about it. Until he was kicked out, until he was personally betrayed, I don't think he will have thought in terms of good or evil at all. And maybe after that, everything was evil to him. I imagine it's a bit like having a loving marriage and discovering that your spouse is having affairs all over the place. It must totally undermine your view of yourself and your view of the world that you live in. One way of coping with that is to go completely bananas. And I suspect that's what he did.
As a result of the failure of Project Avalon, Travis is again suspended from duty. However, Servalan offers him a chance to redeem himself and regain his command by accompanying her on unofficial business outside Federation jurisdiction. Why would Travis have agreed to this?
He still had that fundamental relationship with Servalan, that authority relationship. I mean, she might have been a cow. She might have been the evil bitch of the galaxy, but she was the Supreme Commander. Thinking about it, it's a bit like Ronald Reagan being made President of the United States. I'm not suggesting he's the evil bitch of the galaxy. I mean, he was an actor, for God's sake, and not a very impressive one. And then he became President of the United States, and that automatically gave him a personal authority. She is Supreme Commander. They may not be doing Federation business, but she's still the Supreme Commander, and she is still Ronald Reagan, President of the United States. And he is Ollie North. He wants to get back to his family, the service. I mean, that's all he knows. He wants his family back. He wants his life back. He wants to be Space Commander Travis. That's what he is.
Servalan intends to steal supercomputer Aurak from its dying creator on Aristo. But her plans will cause the death of Surgeon Marriott.
Marriott.
What about him?
His disappearance. There may be questions.
In 12 hours, I shall have him posted as a deserter.
And his family go into slavery on one of the frontier worlds.
It is the normal procedure in a case of desertion.
Of course. Do you remember the medic that saved my life?
You're wasting time.
It was Marriott.
Does it matter?
No. No. Only Blake matters now.
Why did Travis respond in such a way?
There's two aspects of it. One is that the surgeon, like him, a serving officer, he was part of the family. It's all very well to kick civilians about and opposing armies and foes in general about, but you look after your own. The surgeon was one of their own. He was also a particularly relevant one of their own, since he'd done decent things by Travis. There may also have been that undermining feeling that the threat to this man was a threat from another part of the family. In other words, it may have begun to undermine his feeling that he was safe with the service, that the service looked after its own, because it manifestly wasn't at that point. I'm not suggesting that they always do, but a good military force tries to look after its own, and if it can't, it makes damn sure that people involved don't know that it's not looking after its own. So there were two aspects, I think. The undermining aspect and the personal thing.
Blake and Callie, having secured Aurak, head back to the surface of Aristo, only to be confronted by Travis as they prepare to teleport back to Liberator.
Goodbye, Blake.
Wait.
I have waited. Too long.
He's the bonus, Travis. Aurak is the prize.
That box. Aurak. That's what we came for. If it does only half of what was promised, it'll give the Federation greater power than it's ever known. What are you going to do?
What do you think I'm going to do?
I think you're going to kill me, Travis. With or without orders from the Supreme Commander.
With orders, Blake. All right, Travis. Go ahead.
Good shot, Avon.
I was aiming for his head.
Well, what are you waiting for? Come on, man. Why don't you kill us?
No. I've got a better idea. We'll get a message through to the Federation. Tell them that you let us take Aurak. I'm sure they'll be quite fascinated by your explanation.
Stephen, why did you decide to leave the series after the first season?
A couple of reasons, really. First of all, I had a film out of France, and the dates conflicted with the filming of the second series, and that was irreconcilable. And also, I was getting a bit unhappy about the way the episode ended. It was all very samey. I wanted that to alter it, if possible, but wasn't given any firm undertakings that there would be any change in our dress. And generally speaking, we just couldn't meet, so I left.
When Stephen Greif decided he wanted to leave, he wasn't contracted because he was a later character. He only came into the middle of the first series. So I didn't have a long contract on him as I did on the others. I put a contract on them for the first series with an option on our side for the second series. So after the second series, they were free to go if they wanted to. That's how Gareth Thomas was able to leave after the second series. But Stephen was another matter. I mean, he was so, reckoned to be so good as Travis, and we were determined to keep the character on. And he had other offers. He had a film offer and other parts offered to him. And he didn't want to go on for a second series playing the same character he'd already played successfully. So naturally he wanted to leave. I tried to persuade him, and I really thought at one point he was going to rejoin us, but he didn't. Then needed recasting.
Blake!
I cast Brian Croucher. I saw a lot of actors, and I thought Brian was certainly the most suitable. I mean, he was a good, strong actor, extremely tall, and I thought physically very attractive for the audience.
We were looking for someone who had a physical resemblance, for a starter, and some presence as well. Brian was one of a fairly small list, and then of course you have a lot of other things feed in. Who's available, who wants to do it, who doesn't spot the difficulties. Brian didn't spot the difficulties. Neither did we, I suspect.
Brian, is it true that you had originally auditioned for the part of Blake?
Cross Reverence Brian Croucher, actor.
Yes, I did audition. Well, it wasn't an audition. I met David Maloney when the series was first mooted and being started, and I did go out for the part of Blake, but obviously I wasn't a big enough criminal, you know.
Had you seen any of the first season?
I think I do remember Stephen being rather brutish and bullying in one of the episodes in the first series, yes. But no, I didn't sit down and watch the first series. And when it came to David Maloney asking to see me to play part of Travis, stroke two, I was a bit sorry in a way because I didn't quite know what I was going up for.
Brian was never less than totally committed and totally enthusiastic. And he was ill-served on a number of occasions by one particular director, George Fenton Foster. I don't think there's any secret about it. They had very little sympathy with each other. And it was unfortunate that George was the first director he had. And that was very bad news because Brian was quite nervous, understandably, coming into an established program, into an established group, with an established character that he was supposed to take over. And George was less than sympathetic.
Why was Travis's uniform redesigned for season two?
Basically, he had the same appearance. I mean, the physical things, his eye, his arm, were all kept because rather like a sort of comic strip character, these were the fascinations of Travis. So they were retained. I think the fact that we made him a new suit and his arm was perhaps modified and his eye patch was a different shape was all just lip service to another actor coming in.
I think we probably felt that to make the outfits precisely the same was impossible. So it was probably better not to make the attempt.
The costume that I wore was streamlined. It was the elastic, black elastic jumpsuit. And I don't know if Brian Ferry will like this, but I modelled it on Brian Ferry. I modelled it from the hair down, and he's, the way he sings songs, he confronts. I don't know if that makes sense. Does that make sense?
Travis's character also began to change in season two.
We obviously had to develop the character of Travis in the second season, and the only person who'd introduced and worked on him was Terry. I think Chris Boucher began to write in the second series, was interested in the character of Travis. We cast another actor, and I think this gave Chris an opportunity to write and to deepen the character.
When Travis returned to the series, it was made clear that he had made several visits to the retraining therapist. What would this have involved?
Basically, he was reprogrammed. His brain had been tampered with in some fairly major ways, and the only reason that any of the old Travis remained was because he was such a strong character. He resisted it. Arguably, he was sent there in order to erase everything that had previously been Travis, except for his fundamental training, and replace that with something more malleable. Plus, it was a punishment for failure. I suppose the mistake they made was that Travis was his training. And if you wanted to retain the training, then you retained a large chunk of Travis. What you did was damage what was there. And the result was someone who was no longer as stable and as useful as he had previously been. Someone who was dangerously unstable. It's entirely possible that the negative traits in his character, I mean, negative from the point of view of what the Federation wanted from him, the negative, more personal traits probably have become more prevalent. The urge to kill Blake was clearly one of the very strongest. I mean, it was his equivalent of love. I can understand how somebody develops a personal antipathy towards another human being and ultimately wants to kill them. I can't quite understand the actual act of killing them. But then, who needs to stick a gun in people's hands and away they go? The personality ultimately became fractured because we needed an explanation for what were inevitably discontinuities when the character was recast. So we needed reasons, rationales, justifications for what became a different character. Inevitably, when we did that, the character became less clearly defined villain, a more human character with more traits. He therefore became a less strong villain, and a new strong villain replaced him, and that was Servan. But I don't think Servalan would have become the dominant character that she did in the series if Stephen had continued as Travis, and as a result, Travis had simply continued as the character that Travis was.
Blake returns to Earth, intent on destroying the computer complex known as Control, which represents the nerve center of all Federation activity. To help him, he has joined forces with a resistance group who attempt to reconnoiter the Forbidden Zone, which surrounds the installation. Travis is already waiting.
You should have left it to me.
Nothing's lost.
Your opening fire could have ruined everything.
But it didn't, Travis.
My last chance, you said.
Kasabi and I had unfinished business.
This is no time for personal vendettas, Supreme Commander.
Thank you, Travis. I'm obliged for the reminder.
Kasabi?
It's good to see you again.
Why did you murder my people?
Well, they were traitors. Did they expect mercy? From you?
Where were you to rendezvous with Blake?
If you tell me about the rendezvous, I will consider sparing your life.
My life isn't yours to spare.
Oh, but it is.
Then take it. But don't try and browbeat me, Servalan. Or have you forgotten that I knew you as a cadet? My confidential assessment listed her as unfit for command, and I forgot how well connected she was.
That is no concern of mine.
Then it should be. It should be everyone's concern. The Federation is degenerate, run by creatures like her.
It would be no concern of his because of the question of authority. It's like saying, you do remember Ronald Reagan and once appeared with a chimpanzee and the chimpanzee outacted him. The response of Oliver North and the types would be, well, that's no concern of mine. I'm only concerned with the fact that he's president and that I'm a raving bloody lunatic. Thinking about it, maybe Oliver North based his character on Travis.
She's stronger than she looks. She's still resisting the drug.
Double the dose.
That amount could kill her.
That's not important, just so long as she talks first.
Where were you to rendezvous with Blake?
Having obtained the information she needs, Servalan injects Kasabi with a lethal dose. Surprisingly, Travis attempts to stop her.
But if Travis attempted to stop the killing of a terrorist, and it was a terrorist from his point of view, there must have been some logical justification for it. He wouldn't have had any emotional link to this character at all. Presumably this woman was once a Federation officer. To have trained Servalan, she must have been in the services as a teacher or whatever. So consequently, you've got that relationship again, that family relationship. You've got the thing about, well, she might now be a terrorist, but she was once one of us.
Travis arrives too late to prevent Blake from breaching the forbidden zone and entering the control complex. In order to follow, the zone must be deactivated, forcing Servalan to contact the High Council.
Travis?
Yes, Supreme Commander?
I've staked a great deal on this, Travis, but I've achieved what you wanted. The zone will be deactivated in precisely 15 seconds. Both our heads are on the block now, Travis. This must not fail.
We've done it! We've done it! We've done it! I've done it!
Blake, there's nothing here.
There's nothing here.
Nothing. Travis!
You believed it, Blake. Like all the other fools before you. Destroy control and you destroy the Federation. No.
It was here. Everybody knows it was here.
Of course. We've never concealed it. On the contrary, we've broadcast the fact. We used it as a challenge to our enemies. We invited them to attack control.
It was never here.
It was moved. 30 years ago.
To where?
Even I don't know that. But it's safe and secure. And will remain so when those who seek to destroy us believe it's here. You see, it's the great illusion, Blake.
It's an illusion. It's all an illusion.
Gareth, he liked the line, actually. It's all an illusion, Blake. It's an all an illusion. He liked it. And he kept saying it, and we had a laugh, and that's what Gareth liked.
Release your prisoners, Travis. Your mutoids will put down their weapons.
What's the matter with you, Servalan?
She's nervous.
Jenna!
The moment you pull that trigger, they would be dead.
That's right, but so would your supreme command. Release them. Do it!
Your move, I think, Travis. Take their weapons. All right, let's move. It seems as though we both failed, Travis.
Get after them. You hesitated. My life was at risk and you hesitated. Travis, what's that?
Stretching grenade.
You fooled, it's too powerful and you bring the roof in.
That came through frustration of every script.
You know, once he's got him in the corner in scene 53, there's a trap door and he goes through it and he goes, oh my God, not again, you know, and he has to go on to the next script, so.
Blake escapes, but crew member Oleg Gan is trapped and crushed to death by falling masonry.
If it locks, there's no way through.
Brilliant.
They'll dig us out eventually.
Oh, yes. They'll dig us out eventually. And then I'll bury you.
Waste the time.
Shut up, lie.
Just remember your duty.
If you don't shut up, we won't be guarding a corps, Marshal. We'll be having one.
You've been on campaigns, Pa.
I have.
Done a lot of killing.
Enough. More.
It shouldn't embarrass her, at the very least.
I hope so, but she doesn't embarrass easily.
Well, sir, security area, sir. Access is voice print link, sir.
I am Secretary Rontaine, personal representative of the President.
Burkle! Senator Burkle! Ex-official member of the High Council!
Thought he was going to run for it.
But he didn't. You could have shot him.
Top Politica?
Don't worry about them. Space Command runs the Federation. And we look after ourselves.
It's all right for the prisoner.
Broke the rules, didn't he?
Whose rules?
Only ones that matter. Ours.
Space Commander Travis, you are charged under Section 3 of the War Crime Statute Code, Jensen 1, with the murder of 1,417 unarmed civilians on the planet Circaster, date code Beta 2001.
How do you answer the charge?
I am not guilty.
When Travis was first put in charge of the Blake affair, he was on suspension after having massacred civilians on the planet Oros. Is this the same planet? And if so, why was the name changed?
It's a terrible name for a kickoff. I don't know whether I changed the name of the planet where the atrocity took place, whether I changed that by accident, whether I changed it simply because I hated the name that was in the other that was in the other episode. That's entirely possible. I didn't like a lot of the names that were in. Or whether, if pushed into a corner, I might claim that it was a different atrocity that we were dealing with here, because Travis was an evil bastard, and he did a lot of them. I mean, he basically behaved very badly on a number of planets, and Zirkasta was one of them.
Entire prosecution data.
Identities and death certifications of all victims are entered.
Objection.
Hold.
Holding.
The defense requests the names of the alleged victims and the cause of death in each case be specified.
Major Thania, since you have at your disposal instant recall of all prosecution data, I fail to see what purpose will be served by having the computer intone a catalogue of 1,000 corpses.
I may wish to challenge elements of that catalogue before they are entered in the judgment program, sir.
Playing for time.
And playing for Servalan. The computer will find Travis guilty. There's no doubt of that. But those three are responsible for the sentence.
Sure.
So, after hearing all the blood-spattered details,
they'll vote for the maximum penalty.
One almost has to admire that woman.
What, Tanya?
Servalan. You know she's sending Travis to his death in order to keep his mouth shut, but doing it to such an impeccably honest and a painstaking tribunal that her real motives can't even be hinted at.
Has a date been set for the Blake?
Does it matter? Without Travis's evidence, the mishandling of the Blake affair becomes a matter of conjecture. The inquiry becomes a formality.
A presidential stay of execution, so that Travis can give evidence. After this, he should be more than willing.
After this, he'll be a convicted mass murderer.
He could still damage Servalan. Slime sticks, as they would say.
Yes, but the President can't be seen to throw it.
Servalan picked Travis.
The President picked Servalan.
She's outmaneuvered us once again.
Let's say she's outmaneuvering us, but it's not over yet. She could still make a mistake.
Which is presumably why we came. I was beginning to wonder.
We came, Burkhal, because Serverland's ambitions threaten us all. And the President particularly dislikes being threatened.
How was the first day?
Travis is behaving oddly. 3 years ago, he committed a capital crime. Justice has finally caught up with him. How would you expect him to behave?
I wouldn't expect him to sit staring straight ahead, not moving, not reacting. It's almost as though he were drugged.
No, of course not. Risk a mistrial.
And what?
You're representing him. You'd better find out. Anthonia, try not to let Travis guess your motives. He's probably mad, but he certainly isn't a fool.
Do I have a particular favourite episode? I always say trial because it enabled me to voice my feelings and my thoughts as Travis. I mean, we've all been in situations where we've been a bit desperate. And I like the fact that he was able to survive it, which showed him to be a positive character.
Who is it?
Do you remember me, sir?
What are you doing here, trooper?
I'm off duty, sir.
Well, I'm not. I gather you're tired of your freedom.
I'm a 20-year man, sir. I wouldn't recognize freedom if I fell over it. There's a temporary fault on surveillance. Guard's a friend of mine.
Stand to attention when you talk to me. I'm putting you and your friend on report.
Only trying to help, sir. Help?
And how do you think you can help me, trooper?
Brought you something, sir.
Open it.
That's good stuff, sir. You won't go blind drinking that.
All right, Pa. What have I done to deserve this?
Sir?
Faithful trooper, beloved officer, not quite how I see either of us.
You always looked after your men, sir. Now you're going to die. We thought a drink was the least we could do, sir.
Stand at ease. Have one with me.
Thank you, sir. That is good stuff.
You can go now, Pa.
Oh, sir.
Pa.
The report, sir.
No one would believe it.
Well, the relationship with Pa was in trial was a perfectly straightforward one, I think, I felt. It's the family relationship. It's the relationship between people who've grown up in the service. They're both life service, if you like, boy soldiers. One who rose to become an officer and one who remained as other ranks. Pa is other ranks. He's the salt of the earth. He's my granddad. Pa is the sort of other ranks on which any army depends. He's loyal. He's everything that Travis was without the responsibility that Travis has and responsibility warps people. The reason the defense lawyer, also a serving major, sent the booze into Travis in his cell was because she didn't understand why Travis was behaving as he was in the trial room, why he was sitting, ignoring everything, refusing to respond in any way, shape or form. And she was hoping that alcohol would loosen his tongue. Pa took it to Travis for exactly the reasons he said he did. Family. Travis was going to die, clearly, and felt it would be a nice gesture to give him a drink. Travis didn't trust him. That's why he required Pa to take the first drink, because he thought it was poisoned. Travis never stopped being the officer that he was. I mean, he was the officer all the way through, which was the reason for the final scene between Pa and Travis. Why they didn't kill each other. Why Pa would have killed him rather than let him go, why Travis didn't kill him to get past him, and why Travis admired the man and the man admired Travis. Family, training, all those other things. The reason Travis was behaving as he was in the courtroom was because he knew Serverland was watching, and he wasn't about to give away his one move, which was his justification for what he did.
A field officer like myself, is frequently required to make fast, unconsidered decisions. You were all field officers, you know that's true. Time to think is a luxury battle seldom affords you. You react instinctively. Your actions, your decisions, all instinct, nothing more.
officer's instincts are the product of his training. The more thorough the training, the more predictable the instinct, the better the officer. And I am a good officer. I have been in the service all my adult life. I'm totally dedicated to my duty and highly trained in how to perform it. Hunter Castle, I reacted as I was trained to react. I was an instrument of the service. So if I'm guilty of murder, of mass murder, then so are you.
The prisoner will be seated.
His justification for what he did was that he was trained to do it. He did it instinctively. The more pressure you put a soldier under, the more he responds instinctively. If the instinctive response is disgusting, disgraceful, cruel, ugly, it's because he's been trained to be disgusting, cruel, ugly, despicable. And if he's been trained to do it, then somebody has arranged to have him trained like that. And they are as responsible as he is. In other words, we get the soldiers we deserve. It's no good us sitting back and saying, our forces are brutal, our police are brutal. They're brutal on our behalf. And they arise out of a brutal society if they are brutal.
Judgment program 1/3, conclusion. Space Commander Travis, you are guilty as charged.
The tribunal will retire to consider sentence.
Travis receives the death penalty. Why do they refuse to accept his argument?
How could you accept that? If someone stands and says, listen, pal, the reason I did what I did was because you made me do it. You're trying him for an atrocity, a war crime. How would you accept it? I mean, without condemning yourself.
We have considered your sentence at some length. Your contention that what happened on Zarkasta was a direct result of your training concerned us greatly. We accept that you are trained to kill, as are we all. What we cannot accept is that this training leads inevitably to the murder of innocents. Your behavior was not that of a Federation officer, but rather that of a savage, unthinking animal. The sentence of this tribunal is therefore that you be dishonorably dismissed for service, and that you then be executed for the common criminal you have shown yourself to be. Have you anything to say?
The Federation is run by hypocrites and supported by fools. I'm glad to be rid of you all.
All personnel to battle stations! All personnel to battle stations! Automatic airlock will trigger in 3 seconds!
How many kill you, Pa? Out the wall cracked. Automatic airlocks filled the chamber. They'll all be dead by now. Drop the gun.
I can't do that, sir.
I don't need to lose anymore.
I can't let you go, sir.
No!
Some of us weren't hypocrites, were we, Pa?
Single attack run on quadrant 6. Damage is extensive, but confined to that station as far as we can tell.
Damage control team?
Moving in now.
What about casualties?
High and rising all the time.
No estimate yet, Supreme Commander.
Very well. Keep me informed. Well, savage thinking animals have a way of surviving, don't they?
Who was it?
We think it was Blake.
Huh. I must remember to say thank you before I kill him.
What are you planning to do?
I'm planning to leave. You're going to give me a pursuit ship.
And you'll hunt Blake.
While you hunt both of us. Now give the orders. Carefully.
Is Pursuit 4 ready for immediate launch?
Yes, ma'am. And your crew is standing by.
Have the crew stand down. I want them replaced by 3 mutoids. And have them blanked.
I want their minds imprinted to receive orders only from the person who first uses the trigger word outlaw to them.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, you'll need a crew you can rely on.
Still one step ahead? You're not going to use me anymore. Move!
I don't think at the end of trial, Travis could kill Servine, because I don't think that the officer that Travis was could kill the Supreme Commander. I don't think ultimately he could kill her, and I think she knew that.
That message to be logged.
What message? All right, was that something? I thought I heard an identification X-bar. Was it X-bar?
Automatic monitoring confirms. The message appears to be directed to you personally.
Me?
It is a non-standard cipher. A decode is now complete. A message carries a visplay.
Visplay.
Zen, transfer visplay to main screen.
Main screen transfer complete.
Blake, I am sending from the planet X-Bar. I have Ashton's daughter. Her name is Inga, if you remember. All I ask is come to X-Bar and talk. Blake, this is not a trick. Like yourself, I am now a fugitive from the Federation. It is time we pooled our resources. Together we might survive. Alone, the Federation will pick us off one at a time.
Starting with him, we hope.
Blake, the girl is safe if you come to X-Bar within 25 time units. If you do not come, the girl, regretfully, dies.
Would I have been interested in joining the Liberator?
Only if I was captain!
Excuse me, I just dropped the mic there. That's too many gestures.
No, I don't think Travis would ever have joined the crew of the Liberator. This general concept we always had about presenting a sort of Robin Hood in space meant that the Sheriff of Nottingham could never really come and live in the forest.
I don't see Travis ever being able to join the crew of the Liberator, even without Blake. And I personally don't think it would ever have been dramatically possible to make the transition between a man, although outlawed by the Federation he served, a man who basically wanted to get back to serving the Federation, to serving the Federation as he saw it. He was a Federation man.
Arriving on X-Bar, Blake is captured and taken to Travis's base.
Bring her back!
Futile gesture. The girl's a fool. She actually wants to die. Can you understand that, Blake?
Can you?
Oh, yes. I understand shame very well.
You wanted to die, Inga. Why was that?
You wouldn't understand.
So that Blake would not hate your father, but he does.
I do not hate him.
Ashton betrayed you. You must hate him. I would in your place.
That is the difference between us, Travis.
That, too. You asked me if Travis was an evil person. I don't think he... It was just the hors d'oeuvre you saw in Series 2. I think if you want somebody to be evil, I'm the man to play it. And if they write something really evil, I'll show them what evil is with a capital E.
The thing I always felt about Blake Seven was it had a tremendous potential to be Robin Hood in space. And nice, simple, straightforward Robin Hood, you know, good guys get bad guys. What always worried me is that I've never come across anybody who is either totally good or totally bad. And it seems oversimplistic to give to one side or the other all the evil. Though I think there is obviously a balance of good and evil, and most of us manage to go somewhere down the middle. I think Travis leaned heavily towards the evil. He had good aspects to him. Loyalty to the service, and a certain courage. But mostly he was a bad bastard. And I think he was a bad bastard because the Federation forces were bad, were evil. He was trained to be evil. He certainly had no compunction about killing or inflicting pain. If you see that as evil, and as I do, then he was evil. And that was a demonstration of it, his treatment of evil.
Quiet!
Hello, Travis.
Servalon.
Has Blake gone?
Yes. I wanted the Liberator.
I thought it must be something like that.
Are you and I still enemies?
Officially, yes. Unofficially, you lead me to Blake whenever you can. If you help me get him, I'll see you officially listed as dead. There's no one as free as a dead man.
Servalan never backed up anything that she said, really, so any promise she made to Travis had to be a highly suspect. It had to be something upon which you couldn't rely too heavily. And Travis wasn't a fool. He was mad, but he wasn't stupid. And I don't imagine that he relied on any promises of Servalan's to allow him to adopt a new identity, go off to some frontier planet somewhere and be somebody new. I can't see him relying on that very much, since he knew what a treacherous bitch she was. I suspect that it didn't matter to him at that point anyway. He was increasingly suicidal, though not necessarily having the capacity to destroy himself. I suspect that when he got eventually into a position of being able to destroy the human race, he took it as a way of destroying himself without killing himself. The relationship between him and Servalan at that point, I don't think there was one. I think she still thought she could use him. I don't think she realized how mad he was. Obviously, by definition, someone who's mad doesn't recognize the fact.
Servalan devises a plan that will both gain her the Liberator and eliminate a number of her political opponents. Travis also has a part to play which involves him adopting the identity of the incapacitated rebel leader, Shivan, a voice from the past.
When we were in the studio, at that time, well, I think they still do it, Jim Will Fix It was around, and I had this, all this bandaging around me, etc., etc., the Invisible Man number, and they said, we're going on to the next scene, and then the next scene, and we'll see you in three scenes' time. So I couldn't take all this back. I had to go and relax, so I went and laid on a bed and fell asleep, you see. And when I woke up, everybody was laughing at me, and I looked down, and I've got this Jim Will Fix It badge on me.
Gareth Thomas and Paul Darrow are known for their practical jokes. Did they ever play any on you?
No, they don't play practical jokes on Brian. It's not, Brian taught them all the practical jokes that they know.
In Voice from the Past, where he foregoes the opportunity to take over the Liberator in order to have a personal crack at Blake. Obviously, it wasn't a rational decision, but at that point, he had become so obsessed with killing Blake, it had become the love of his life, the hate of his life, the reason for living or dying, that the Liberator really didn't mean too much to him. Gradually, as that series unfolds, nothing matters to him anymore except the destruction of Blake.
If, at that point, Travis had succeeded in killing Blake, what would have happened to him?
I think he'd probably have died. They do say you should be careful of what ambitions you have in case you achieve them. His ambition, his need, his lust to kill Blake, if satisfied, would have left him with nothing.
Freedom City. A place where renegades and rebels, mercenaries and political dissidents can meet and socialize in relative anonymity, outside the Federation's influence. It is here that Blake arrives in his search for control, now known as Star One. Brian, switch that off. Thank you. He seeks Dockley, a former cyber surgeon who, on the run from the Federation, may know of its location. Travis knows this and is waiting.
Get up. Well, see, so you're getting around. How's the leg?
You drunken butcher. Look what you did.
Lucky to have it, my friend.
Lucky? You crippled me. Get up. I want to see you fall down.
Ah! Thanks. Next time, don't leave it so late.
Get out.
Ungrateful scum! Have a drink, Travis.
One of us has to sleep straight. Let it be me.
So, you're a surgeon?
Used to be.
I heard about that business on the Bowery.
The secondary burner blew out. I did what I could for the survivors.
And is he one of them?
Travis? No. He's a passenger. Now he's my bodyguard.
The relationship between Dockley and Travis was an ambiguous one. The character of Travis was becoming more ambiguous. I know that sounds like a politician's answer, but the relationships were much less clearly defined. As Travis became madder and less predictable, the relationships became more peculiar. Dockley was of use to Travis. Travis was clearly a mad and lonely man. Maybe at that point, youth and affection become interchangeable. One defines the other. I mean, maybe that's as close as affection that Travis could ever come.
Oh, Commander Servlan. Welcome, welcome, welcome. We so rarely receive an emissary from the Federation here in Freedom City. I am Commander Trans, fixed with delight.
Supreme Commander.
Oh, my apologies. Supreme Commander. Pray, be seated.
There is a man here named Dockley, a cyber surgeon. I am willing to pay 2 million credits for him, dead or alive.
My dear Commander, there are many wanted men here.
There is a second man here named Travis. He has an artificial arm and an eye patch. I am interested in finding him also.
An eye patch. Oh, how quaint.
Well,
placed as we are, we must necessarily maintain a position of strict neutrality.
Crantor, I don't have time for that. It is vital I find Dockley before certain insurrectionist elements contact him. A Federation problem which we intend to eliminate.
Really, Commander, Supreme Commander. You make my blood run cold. I wonder if I emphasize sufficiently how highly we value our neutrality. I'm sure I must have done.
How highly? You have a suggestion?
10.
For both Travis and Dockley.
My dear Supreme Commander, give me 2 hours.
The passenger said to the Chinaman, "It's chicken." He said, "No, not chicken, it's duck."
We're on.
Are we rolling? Dockley, that was a cowboy one. Gambit. Do I remember Gambit? Yeah, that was a cowboy one. Yeah, it was Clint Eastwood time, yeah. I remember trying to get through doors in that bloody hat. No, I'd rather not add the hat.
Who was responsible for the Zorro outfit in this particular episode?
It all melts into great miasma. Great alcoholic miasma, I kind of think. One of the great advantages of working at the BBC was a couple of excellent clubs. The Zorro outfit in Gambit would have been a matter for the frock designer. There was quite a bit of leeway given to directors and designers to come up with whatever set dressings and character dressings they wanted.
It would seem that Dockley cannot hold his drink.
Put him in the bag. Why does he do it?
He gets thirsty.
You want a drink now, Travis? Earlier tonight, he said that 30 of his ex-patients tried to kill him. What does that mean?
It means he gets drunk.
Well, whatever he's got on his mind, it can't be that bad. I hear he was quite a hero at the bar.
Perhaps he was trying to pay something back.
They say he was one of the first in the burner. When the fumes got too much for him, it was you who dragged him out.
Oh, yes. I'm a hero, too.
So, you saved his life twice. Why?
It's my noble nature.
Oh, yes, Travis.
I can see it shines from your one yellow eye. Nobility.
Thanks for the dream.
What's this about?
You're being collected. We're Krantor's rubbish collectors.
Collected?
Together with a hidden listening device, Travis's unconscious form is delivered to Servalan. Krantor therefore overhears Servalan's scheme to kill Docany by planting a bomb within Travis's prosthetic arm. Later, when Travis regains consciousness...
So you've arrived, Servalan. Where's Blake? Is he heading here?
For once, I'm not interested in Blake. I want Dockerly.
I can't help you there.
You have Dockerly staked out. You're waiting for Blake.
I haven't seen Dockerly in 2 years.
Just see where you are.
That your new muscle, Servalan? Looks like a powder puff.
Yes, well, let's forget the pleasantries. Tell me where to find Dockerly. I'll let you have Blake.
You haven't got Blake.
Travis, we can forget the past. Wipe it out. I'm willing to help you again.
Well, don't on my own.
Why? What's the matter with it?
Damn you, Trevor.
I must have been damaged when you were brought here.
Shut up!
When Travis is released, he immediately seeks Dockerly so that the neural circuits in his arm can be repaired. Krantor, meanwhile, sends his henchman, Jellidish, to kill Travis, as he is curious to know what vital information Dockerly carries. Servalan knows that the possession of this information will place him on the Federation Council's death list, allowing her to have Freedom City legitimately destroyed.
I'm going to have someone, but he's no problem. And thus, they're Travis. Over there behind the machine. Jenny Travis. There's two of them. Jenna, Kelly, over here. Just luck.
I went to a better school, Shaving Group.
You're a fool, Thomas. You're gonna die anyway.
Not as quick as you.
As soon as they take an arm off. Kaput. And even like that, you die of gangrene. Take it off. You die quicker. Oh, Servalan knitted you up well. Travis. Dockerly, where are you? Over here.
Just drop the gun, Travis.
Blake, I've been waiting for you. I knew you'd come.
I'm glad I didn't disappoint you. It's Dockerly I want to see.
What do you want with me?
One piece of information. The location of Star One.
I was a surgeon, Blake. I thought if I kept out of Federation policy...
Dockerly, my arm, you're going to fix it.
What happened?
The neural circuits. I brought your case. Turn around.
But you operated on the people who built Star One.
The technicians, yes. 30 of them. I had no choice.
Then you must know where Star One is located. How could you not?
I erased their brain prints, their lives. I left them total amnesiacs. It was only towards the end that I...
Go on, Dockerly.
As I came to the end, I realized that Servalan would never believe that I hadn't scanned the brain prints. That I myself would be the last to be treated.
Look, get on with it.
That's when I decided to run for it. I faked the operation. I'm the last of my victims.
What the devil?
But just a moment. If the cover to the arm is removed, then the bomb placed inside will detonate. Surely Travis realizes this.
He's mad, self-destructive. I suppose it's the lust to destroy somebody else must become sort of all mixed up with a self-destructive urge. That might have been the ultimate satisfaction, the way out of the hell in which he was living. He gets to kill Blake, he gets to get himself out of misery, he gets all in one fell swoop. What a good idea. Pity it didn't work.
Sorry, it's not primed.
All right, Blake. If you're mad enough,
kill me now. Our quarrel is the Federation, not with you.
Give me the gun, then.
That would be a mercy. Are you feeling particularly merciful?
The reason Blake doesn't kill Travis in Gambit is a particularly cruel one, because he knows what a miserable, destroyed, and generally sad character Travis has now become. And it would be a mercy to put him out of his misery, if you see death as being out of his misery. And Travis certainly did, and Blake certainly recognized that, and wouldn't do it. And that's the reason why Travis wanted Blake to kill him. Broken back dog.
Doggedy! That last operation, you said it was faked. Does that mean he can still remember?
As far as I know, Blake, I certainly hope so.
Who is he?
His name was Logan. He was a cyber surgeon like myself. Perhaps that's why I changed my heart. Anyway, we faked the operation between us. We didn't erase the brain print. We took a copy of it. And then we both ran. He took the copy with him. I heard that he'd gone to Earth on a planet called Koth. Later, I heard that one of their tribal chiefs had his brain print on a thong round his neck. Well, either it was the print or his head. They're a crude lot on Koth.
While in orbit above the planet Koth, Liberator detects Pursuit Ship 4.
Goodbye, Travis. Got him.
So much for Travis. Mind you, you could hardly miss at that range.
What did you want me to do? Give him a sporting chance?
Pursuit Ship 4, Travis here. Reply.
The Liberator has obviously destroyed it.
Yes. Blake must be one step behind us. We know the Keeper of the Secret is on Goth. We know he is a royal person. Perhaps Blake knows that too.
But which one?
You will soon know. And when you do, you could control the Federation. You and I.
Don't be ridiculous, Travis.
Look, Star One is the computer control center. It controls the climate on more than 200 worlds. Communications, security, food production, it controls them all. It is the key to our very lives. Think of all that power.
You can see why the Council themselves don't know where Star One is. In the wrong hands.
Yes, but in the right hands. Yours and mine.
Be very careful you don't overreach yourself, Travis.
There'll come a time when such ideas seem unambitious. One day, Servalon.
Yes? What are you talking about, Travis?
What is he talking about? Would he really want to share that kind of power with Servalon?
It was possible that Servalon was all Travis had left. I don't know. I mean, it could be. There was still a vestige of the old formal relationship. The memory of what he once was, the memory of what he once had, his place in the order of things, his family. It may just have been a joke, a rather sick joke on his part. Once more, just confirming what he already knew, that Servalon couldn't be trusted to give him the time of day.
I must alert the nearest Federation flotilla to attack the Liberator. I can't do it from here on this thing. I have to use your ship.
The Liberator may pick you up.
It's a chance we'll have to take, unless you're prepared to risk Blake getting to the secret before we do. Well?
All right. How long?
3 hours.
That long?
Don't you trust me?
Oh, of course not.
Then trust my ambition.
But where Travis's ambitions truly lay, Servalon could never have anticipated. Together with the brain print, Travis takes off. His destination... Star One. Hours later, Blake discovers that the old king has been left to rot in a dungeon, together with his court jester.
Take the talisman, the brain of the healer. The man with the eye patch took it.
Travis! Old man, Lurgan, the healer. Did he talk of Star One? Did he speak to you of anything?
He's dead!
Did he say anything to you, Greg?
He said a fool knows everything and nothing. A fool knows everything and nothing.
The location of Star 1 is at grid reference C-17320 in the 11th sector.
11th sector, that must be in the middle of nowhere.
Shut up.
The location of Star 1 is at grid reference C-17320 in the 11th sector.
Lurgan must have planted it in his brain.
A man with a sense of humor.
A fool knows everything and nothing.
Yes, that must have been the trigger phrase.
A fool to keep a secret that Lurgan never wanted in the first place.
Blake, this is Callie. Do you read me?
Yes, Callie, bring us up.
Good directors. Now, did I have any good directors? I thought, I thought the producer, this sounds like brown nosing really, but I thought the producer, David Maloney, he directed the last episode. And I truly wish that he directed the first episode also, because, I mean, you are a bit at sea. You've got to imagine that this series has been running one series, and these people were into what they were doing. And really, I needed as much help as I could get to carry on creating the part of Travis. And David Maloney, I felt there was a very workmanlike director. He was very thorough. He did pay attention to the actors, and he did know his technical stuff. David Maloney was a good man.
In season 2, Terry and Chris and I worked out a concept for the whole series, and Chris wrote Star 1 as the end of the second season, and I was very fortunate to direct it. I think, I don't know whether I engineered it myself, but some director wasn't able to do it, well, had to drop out. It wasn't possible. So I was enjoying doing Chris's script anyway, an excellent writer in that genre. And I was pleased to do Star 1, and of course that was the end of Travis.
Was I pleased in the demise of Travis? He died, you know. Most of the characters that I play die. They're either stabbed, mostly shot, or they go and rot in a prison. I mean, at present time, I think I'm doing, in this hell of a business, 205 years in prison, you know, or more.
I have been doing some calculations. If this is Star 1...
If it is.
First, catch your computer, but all right, it probably is, and that being the case, the choice of location is fascinating.
I'm glad you're enjoying it.
The nearest large galaxy to our own is Andromeda. So this is the nearest point to Andromeda. If anyone could cross intergalactic space in less than a lifetime, we are now precisely upon the route that they would take.
What are you trying to say, Ed?
I directed the detectors toward the Andromeda galaxy. There are thousands of satellite generators out there beyond Star 1.
What?
Even with the Federation's resources, it must have taken them years.
It must be the biggest antimatter minefield ever put together.
Minefield?
What minefield?
Perhaps the intergalactic drive has been developed. Question is, by whom?
A defense to keep mankind in, or something else out.
Star 1, a single planet orbiting a dying sun. This represents the Federation's greatest strength, and ultimately its greatest weakness. The technicians stationed there have become victims of Federation paranoia, their psycho-conditioning preventing them from contacting anyone outside the installation, and therefore leaving them helpless in the face of an alien invasion, intent on manipulating Star One's systems for their own ends. Servalan uses the ensuing chaos to have herself declared president, unaware that she is about to inherit a ruined empire. Leaving Jenna and Villa on board Liberator,
Blake, Avon, and Callie teleport to the planet's surface, armed with explosives. However, on entering the installation, Blake and Callie are apprehended.
Villa, teleport Callie and Blake, quickly.
Right. Avon?
Well?
There's no response. What's going on? Where are they?
Inside. It must be shielded.
Do you want to come up?
No.
You're here, then. Apparently. I was told you'd be alone. Obviously, you were misinformed. Who is this woman?
She is my mother.
I was told you could be difficult. You seem to have been told rather a lot about me. I'm not unfamiliar with traitors, but the scale of your treachery is unusual. And your insistence on carrying out the final act personally must make you unique.
Your disapproval would carry more conviction if you were not going to benefit from my treachery. Now, when do I get to perform the final act?
Which of your hands is artificial?
This one. Rather good, don't you think?
And the eye patch? What happened to that?
Travis. Fancy meeting you here.
Put the gun down, Avon. It's too late to stop it now.
Convince me.
People light, and I may let you live.
Be informative. And I may let you die. You'll want that after I've shot off an arm and a leg or two.
I thought you were supposed to be the one with brains.
Brains, but no heart. Now talk or scream, Travis. The choice is yours.
On Star One, the reason he showed no fear when Avon produced the gun and threatened him was that Travis knew what was going on, knew that it was all over, knew that Avon, as a member of the human race, had very little time to live. Again, that feeling of power. He's a happy little maniac.
Most of the systems have been modified already. The chaos and destruction should already be sufficient to ensure that resistance is slight.
When will you be ready for the ultimatum?
Ultimatum?
Laying out of our terms for the restoration of order?
Policy is not our concern, Travis. It is sufficient to serve.
So Travis had betrayed all of humanity.
You will always find a traitor, and you will never understand the reasons for the treachery. You will never understand why he betrayed you. I still don't think Christ understood why Judas betrayed him. I'm not sure Judas understood why he did it either. So it was just find a traitor, somebody sufficiently damaged, and somebody within the series that everybody knew. And Travis seemed like a good choice.
Travis effects an escape from Avon and heads for the control center. Avon follows, systematically gunning down all opposition.
Is it nearly complete? As you see, constructing the circuits required to deactivate the defense zone was difficult. But we were able to keep the technicians alive long enough to duplicate their entire brain patterns as well as their physical shape. May I ask you an impertinent question?
If you don't mind an impertinent answer.
I have taken on the shape of your species. I use your words. And yet I cannot understand you. Why have you betrayed your own kind? Why have you given us the means to eradicate your species?
Eradicate humanity?
Virtually.
Well, maybe I just earn my crowd.
You are Travis? I am Travis. And who is this? His name is Blake. His name was Blake.
There are, in a superficial way, personal jokes. Not jokes exactly, but ironies. I am Travis was a quite deliberate line to underline the fact that poor old Brian had spent a whole season trying to live down Stephen and replace him. So I am Travis was there. I spent quite a long time working that into the scene, structuring the scene so that he could say, I am Travis.
Each of these keys will close down one sector of the defense zone. When I've connected this last one, you can begin.
My one regret is that they'll never know who really killed them.
Why didn't Travis make sure of Blake when he shot him on Star One? I think he was sure of him. I mean, I think he was satisfied that he'd shot him, that he'd killed him, that if he wasn't dead, he could go back to it afterwards as a bit of a treat and finish him off, because, I mean, he'd certainly knocked him down. And in the meantime, he'd got rather a large gesture to make, a sort of galactic two fingers to the rest of humanity who had betrayed him in the form of his family, the service, who had betrayed him in the first place. I suppose people who grow up in institutions must feel betrayed in some way. It's lonely enough being an only child. It must be hell being an only child without any parents. I don't know whether the destruction of humanity had become the substitute for killing Blake, whether Blake and humanity were one and the same thing, and therefore you destroyed the two all in one wonderful fell swoop. What a jolly day.
It is finished. Now you can open the way for our fleet.
Clad in his Federation uniform, Travis completes the symbolism by deactivating a portion of the defense zone with his artificial hand. Then Blake shoots him in the back.
The final act.
Avon arrives, and the alien commander and his technician are caught in the crossfire. As they die, they revert to their original forms. Shapeless, glutinous mass.
Avon!
How bad is he?
Bad enough.
The center of the control room is occupied by a raised circular well which leads to the heart of an atomic reactor. Using the safety rail to steady his aim, Travis attempts to lease off one final shot at Blake.
Is he dead, Avon? Is Travis dead?
He is now.
Travis was disposed of finally in the most spectacular way that we could think of. If I can recall, trying to blast him away, well, I think it was probably Dr. Strangelove that influenced me. Where, do you remember that sequence where the plane opens up? And the guy rides away on the bomb. There's something like that.
What exactly was it that Travis fell into?
It was a sort of giant magimix. It was a reactor of some sort. I think I just avoided saying what it was, but it was certainly very painful. Made his eyes water, no question.
Don't you mean I?
Sorry, yes, made his eye water. How very cruel. That was the very last thing that we did on that episode, and the poor bugger had about... Sorry. David had a minute and a half to do that scene. I can still remember David sitting in the gallery screaming, "Get him down the hole! Get him down the hole!" And he got poor Brian on his wire, and as I remember, it got hooked up to various painful parts. That certainly made his eyes water. I remember buying him a drink afterwards. He looked really quite pale and was still limping, talking rather higher in a rather higher register than he normally did. Could have been relief, of course.
Did I have a large pain in my back when I shot that leg? No, I didn't. I had a large pain in my pelvic regions because I was prostrate. Give me breathing air. Twirled around at 2:50 on the last day of the last shoot of Series 2, and I had to sleep. And I did sleep. And I'm lucky to be actually talking with my voice now, because I could actually be giving this interview in a voice like that.
Oh, I don't think it was a total failure. Like most adventures, it didn't turn out quite the way we expected when we set out upon it. And I'm sure that at the time, Brian was pretty bloody miserable in the part. And there was quite a lot of feeling that it hadn't really worked. If Brian had been desperate to continue, then he would have continued. We didn't sort of kill him. I mean, we didn't sort of stamp over his kicking and screaming body or anything. I mean, he wandered out, and I could understand that. By the same token, we weren't desperate to keep him because it didn't seem to be working. In retrospect, I think a lot of things did work. And I think Brian did a damn good job in the circumstances. So it wasn't a total disaster, it was something less than a total success.
The aliens were closing down the defense zone. There must be a fleet out there. We must warn the Federation. Humanity is going to need all the resources it can get.
The dramatic irony that I was looking for in that last episode, I mean, it sounds a bit pretentious, dramatic irony, but that's what it was. I mean, it was basically just a straightforward irony. Travis was setting about destroying the Federation, but more importantly, that Blake and the others, having spent 26 episodes trying to destroy the Federation, were now placed in the position of having to defend it. And again, I sort of worked the episode towards that. Blake and Travis were both, like all of us, small individuals who never get the large picture. In relation to the Federation, they fought their particular corners for their own personal reasons. I don't think either of them knew what the Federation was any more than the average citizen knows what the society he lives in is. I think in the final analysis, if you're going to hate or love, you do it towards individuals. It would have been necessary for Blake to focus on a representative of the Federation, and that's what Travis was. And Servalan was the personification of the Federation, if you like. Travis didn't really need to focus anything, so Travis's personal hatred of Blake was a personal hatred of Blake, whereas Blake's hatred of the Federation probably did need personal expressions.
Travis's final act, his legacy, is the start of the intergalactic war.
In the firm belief that at this present time there is someone somewhere writing a single series for Travis to go on the BBC so that he can go and decimate the whole of the universe, or have a good try anyway. It's all a big illusion, viewer.